The following is part two of our Bears Barroom pre-camp show. Some of the language and pop cultural references could be interpreted as offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Step! 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 Step!
I said it on Bears Hour Live, me and Lauren kind of in chorus here, step for step. Almost like the New Kids on the Block.
Oh my God.
I had to throw that little reference. You're looking at a guy that really was covering for a lot of garbage. Garbage effort, garbage play, garbage tackling. When you are a defensive back coach and you see that kind of turmoil at the corner position, as well as influx of health questions at the nickel position, you had a guy that's covering a lot of people's messes and he's not getting a lot of credit. But when you look at the tape, he's in the right place at the right time. He doesn't back down from physicality. He's filling the alley and completing his assignment. When you're looking at a guy that's got to fill his gap and have gap responsibility, that's not going to show up on the stat sheet. But the fact that he flew up 150 miles an hour, took on the tackle, and the running back was able to try to cut back and got stuffed by Jarrell Freeman, you know, Matt Ballsley's not going to count that on his stat sheet for the Adrian Amos chapter and why he's such a good player and a valuable asset to this team. But when you're scouting and you recognize, well, the kid's covering a lot, he's got to, let's not forget this point, too. You're looking at the other safety position was rotated from Shane's boy, Przinski. You had Corte, Harold Jones Corte. You had Deion Bush coming in there who doesn't know his assignments. And there was confusion there and finger pointing. So you had a lot of reasons. So therefore, the fan base, which was super, super high on this football player, and me and Lauren really took to the task his rookie season to bring game tape to the fan to showcase what an asset Amos was. That, and now again, he had, I think he missed two games with injury, banged up. But this is a football player that is a starter. So I don't understand how you sign a guy like Demps, who's going to come in here and his calling card is creating turnovers, that's going to be able to push over to the free safety spot and put Amos in a more natural position for him where he can blitz, because this kid's an athlete. I mean, some of his test grades, Lauren could tweet him out there or talk about him, when he was at the combine are off the charts. This kid is an athlete. He needs to focus and take the time out in the offseason, much like all players do, to catching and the football, catching and dropping the football, the difference between winning and losing games. Giants game, Lauren pointed out, Amos had an opportunity to turn the whole tides of that game, made the perfect play, did everything right, except he dropped the football. Can't get those plays back. He knows that. He has to look in the mirror. This football player is an asset to this team. Feel like he's going to be your starting strong safety next to Demps. And I don't think that anybody needs to push the panic button on this football player to be axed out there. You saw them, Aldo, skip over the safety position in a hole in the draft. So where the Bears seem to draft a third-round safety every year since George Washington was in office, now they don't have to do it. I think they're very confident in Adrian Amos. I'm very calm. I know Lauren is and can speak on it as well. I just think, mark my words, Adrian Amos in this scheme, in his third year in this scheme, is going to be comfortable and he's going to be in a more comfortable position to continue his ascension on the NFL level.
There you go,
the only
fellas.
Thing I'll ahead, add Lauren. To that is that, and you hit it pretty well in the head with Amos specifically, but just the idea that I think people don't realize how much turnovers are much more of a team stat than an individual stat. I mean, I know one guy gets credited with the interception of the forced fumble, and certainly Charles Tillman's peanut punch was an exception to this rule where he could just one-on-one create a turnover by himself. But when you look at the Bears defense as a whole, there's not a lot of opportunities for one guy to just simply make a great play by himself and make an interception. It takes the corner, you know, for Adrian Amos to get an interception, it takes the cornerbacks covering their men perfectly. It takes the pass rush getting pressure on the quarterback and making him either force a throw early or throw a little bit more inaccurately than he'd like, or take a tighter window that he's trying to throw to. And then it takes Adrian Amos to be able to get in position and make the play. It's definitely not just a one-person thing, and that's why you see a lot of teams get turnovers in bunches. You look at like the Houston Texans last year when Quinton Demps had 8 interceptions. I think AJ Bouye had like 6 because they had such a strong pass rush and some strong players in the secondary and even at linebacker in coverage. It's sort of easy that once the turnovers start coming, because the defense plays so well in a hole, you see them get more and more turnovers as quarterbacks are get, you know, continue to pile them up and continue to force the ball a little bit more against this, you know, even the perception of a stout defense. So I think when the Bears defense improves as a whole, you'll see the turnover numbers come up as a whole and not necessarily reflect the individual playmaking ability of the defensive backs, because sometimes you just happen to be in the right place at the right time, and there's a lot of luck that goes into turnovers.
There you go, fellas. That's why you should be listening to Bears Hour Live, because you get that type of analysis, and it is top-notch. Lou Hempen over at Twitter asked the question.
Crazy Lou.
Yeah, Crazy Lou. And I know you guys covered this on Bears Hour Live, too. How do you think the changes to the player cuts all at once? The league is going. Explain it to the audience, Lauren, how the player cuts have changed from what to what?
Yeah, so in the past, when, you know, you get down to like right before the 4th preseason game, every team cuts from their 90-man roster to 75, you know, a nice little, was that 15-player cut, and then you go into your 4th preseason game where you can kind of emphasize those last 22 guys that are going to be fighting for their jobs. But now, and I haven't looked at exactly when the deadline is, I believe it's going to be after the 4th preseason game. Instead of having that first 75-man cut, they skip that. You go to the 4th preseason game with a full 90-man roster, and then after that game, you cut from 90 to 53 and lose 37 members of your roster. So there's going to be, it's going to make those 4th preseason games perhaps a little bit more interesting, and it's going to make things a lot more difficult on general managers who, you know, are trying to, you know, you're going to have more than 53 guys you want to keep around. So a lot of times general managers are trying to cut someone and maybe have them fly under the waiver wire radar so they can snag them back up on the practice squad afterwards. And it's going to be a hell of a mess to sort of sift through when, you know, across the, you know, 32 teams release 37 guys all at the same time. So I'm not a math major, but that's more than 900 players all hitting the market at once. And you're going to see a lot of movement, I think, right at that September 1st, you know, beginning of the year deadline for that 53-man roster.
Going to be amazing. And I did not, I somehow missed this rule change during the off season. It must have been because of my premium membership to Pornhub.com.
Interrupted things. One thing to keep in mind too, when it comes down to the, you know, going from the 90 to 53, you know, amid all of the chaos, is the waiver wire claim order. Chicago is going to be sitting at number 3. So they're going to have, you know, pretty early dibs to be able to claim guys against, you know, all these other teams. And I actually think Phil brought this up on Bears Hour Live. I think what all of this is going to lead to is, like what Lauren said, mentioning the 4th preseason game with having all of these, you know, players still on your roster. I think you're going to see a flurry of lower end trades. You know, you see some bottom of the roster guys where you want to get there, and you trade a conditional pick.
Zach Miller.
Anybody. Right.
There you go.
Like that.
Who was that tight end we traded for?
Yeah, well, what's his name?
Zach Miller. What was his name?
Who was that?
He can imitate a coach very well, Bill O'Brien. Oh, he just couldn't do anything else.
Oh, what was his name? He was from the
Texans. I think he went on to the Lions.
Yeah, he did.
I'm looking it up. Hold on. Was he on the active roster?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was.
Kari Lee. They also had Tony Moriaki last year, you may remember.
Yeah, yeah, he actually
I thought he was
going to
make the roster.
He balled out in that one preseason game. Yeah, but getting back to what I was saying, I think you're going to see a lot of lower-end trades.
Yeah.
Like Phil said, you know, 6th and 7th rounders or future conditional picks. So teams like, you know, New England that are way down the waiver wire don't have to wait to maybe you know, have 31 other teams bypass a guy that they deem worthy for the for the bottom of their roster, like Cravon LeBlanc, who has no future in the NFL.
Well, and that's a great point. You know, Cravon LeBlanc, a Philadelphian special alike. But, Shane, I think that you make a really great point there. And also, when you consider that the Cleveland Browns have invested so much in draft choices, they're going to be reluctant to turn over the roster, to get rid of some of these young players that they've drafted the last two seasons and invest in someone who is new to the roster. So that might even create more opportunity for the Chicago Bears, because the Browns might bypass some players that the Bears really like. Great point.
Yep.
All right. So I'm breezing through the questions here. Chris Armstrong asks, hi, guys. Do you think the Bears will try to pick up a veteran inside linebacker if Trevathan starts the year on the PUP list? Lauren, what do you think?
Brian Urlacher's out there, Lauren.
He still is. I saw him throw a pass the other day. Did you see that video?
He was at on the golf course.
Exactly.
He threw a better ball than Aaron Rodgers.
He certainly did. He really did.
Nice. On a golf course.
What do you think, Lauren? Do you think that the Bears might be shopping for an inside linebacker?
I really don't think so, just because nothing has changed really with Danny Trevathan in the last 6-plus months. I feel like, you know, whenever he had surgery on his patellar tendon or whatever it is, I mean, there's a couple guys out there right now that are, you know, you would consider taking a flyer on, a guy like Darrell Washington, the former Arizona Cardinal, DeQuell Jackson from the Colts, even like Stephen Tulloch, the former Lions and Eagles linebacker. I mean, there's some names out there, but I think you would have already seen that been worked on, at least as far as a guy brought in just for a workout like they did with Victor Cruz before they signed him and some of those other guys. But you have linebackers on the roster. I mean, obviously everyone's Nick Kwiatkowski is going to fill in and be that starter. I think Trevathan will start the season on the PUP list, and you're going to see Kwiatkowski start the first 6 games of the season. But then they have John Timu, who started a few games last year when Freeman and Trevathan were out. You've got Christian Jones, who they keep moving inside and outside, and the injury might be his way back onto the 53-man roster for a third year, somewhat surprisingly, the way he kind of keeps being able to stick around. There's always been potential there, but you wonder how much more he's got in him besides just his special teams ability. And then they also brought back Jonathan Anderson. So they've got, you know, those three guys on the bench behind Kwiatkowski, Trevathan, and J.R.L. Freeman. So I think they're pretty comfortable with the young talent that they have there, and they're not really in a position to add a veteran simply because they want Nick Kwiatkowski to get that starting experience if Trevathan's going to be out. And so the only reason you would sign a free agent is for, you know, the special teams ability and their ability to fill in as a backup. And I think guys like Anderson, Timu, and Christian Jones have all sort of, you know, I don't know, have worked their way up through special teams. So, you know, that's sort of covered with them. And then you have some young potential on the field there if they do get more of an opportunity to work on the defense if things were to get another step worse with another injury or something like that. But I think largely they're comfortable with the linebacker depth that they have.
Yeah, I sort of feel like if they're going to pick up an inside linebacker, it might be during that final cutdown and seeing what's available. So, you know, I don't think that they're specifically going to be trying to target somebody for a trade or anything like that. So,
I think they look for the Cravon LeBlanc of linebackers.
Exactly.
If something like that came available, they'd take him. But they're not going to go sign a veteran that's, you know, anywhere near the age of 30.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. All right. Just a general Twitter question here for everybody. I'd like to get your take on it. Is which Bear rookie do you have high expectations for in this training camp? The majority of the responses that I got were about Adam Shaheen, which I think is a safe guess. But do you guys have a name outside of Shaheen that you might think is going to come out of training camp looking really good?
I think Tarik Cohen is really going to shock a lot of people. I think, you know, I broke him down for Bears Hour Live. We did, Aldo put a beautiful piece together as we talked about it on Bears Barroom Radio after the draft, just after the draft, comparing him to Tyreek Hill. Then a few other media outlets took that and ran with it as well. But Bears Barroom was the first, I'll say, to talk about that kind of comparison. I think this kid gives you explosive plays in short area bursts, and he has an innate ability to recognize daylight, you know, that Barry Sanders-esque ability to stop on a dime and cut back, knowing where people are. Gale Sayers for the older crowd, just that kind of instincts with this lightning fast ability gives a player who can get in space and be a great counter to a Jordan Howard, who's a downhill, instinctive, tremendous football player. You all know how I feel about him. So I think Tarik Cohen is going to be somebody we need to really, I believe by the end of 3 weeks of preseason football, the Tarik Cohen jersey sales in Chicago are going to be high.
See that? I can't argue with the guy. I can't call him a fucking idiot or anything because I totally agree with that. Shane, you got a thought on that?
This is a completely boring pick, but I am a little, you know, eager to watch this, to watch the Andy Phillips show kicker.
No, that's because I don't think that's boring at all. I like that. Yeah.
No, I mean,
great choice, Shane.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Connor Barth. I mean, I got to give him his credit. He started off a little rough and then did bounce back. But I've heard some pretty good reviews on Andy Phillips. I know he doesn't have – I think it was Adam Hoke today said he doesn't have the huge leg, but he's been very accurate. And it's not every day you see a 27-year-old rookie come into the NFL. So that will be a fun one to watch. And you know, it's just those little moves like that may pay off for you huge. I said we had Robbie Gould, you know, for forever here, and everybody was surprised, you know, at the timing of when they released him last year, and Barth comes in and misses some kicks his first few games for us. But like I said, he bounced back nicely, and it does seem like Ryan Pace is pretty high on Barth, but bringing in Phillips to provide some competition there, that's going to be a yet another battle worth focusing in on down in Bourbonnais in a couple of weeks, or in another week.
Yep. Shane, excuse me, Lauren, I know you've got a good name for me. I got to tell you, Lauren, you did a podcast with me, a month before the draft, and you gave me your mock draft for the Chicago Bears. One of the guys you picked was Kenny Holliday, the wide receiver from NIU. He unfortunately went to the Detroit Lions, and every time I see a Lions tweeter, they are fucking jizzing on themselves about this kid, this wide receiver, who looks like he is showing a lot of promise over there. So I think you really targeted a really fine wide receiver. Hopefully you can target a rookie for us whose name we haven't heard and the Bears fans should look out for.
Yeah, I don't have
fuck
anyone.
You then.
Oh, my God, all that build-up.
You, yeah. you got Jesus, you could have at least cheated while I did the build-up and found a name.
Let me help him.
Roster up and down. Isaiah Irving, inside linebacker from San Jose. He's gonna surprise people in camp. True story.
Lauren, why don't you use the Roy Robertson Harris?
He's not a rookie, Phil. This is year two.
This is technically his rookie year.
Exactly.
That's what I thought you were going to go there, Lauren.
No, I didn't want to cheat. I mean, I spent some of that time looking up Andy Phillips' stats from last year at Utah and his career as a kicker. I'll just talk about that since I don't have a new name out there.
Come on, Rashad Coward. Go ahead.
What about that's Rashad? Right,
I'm not ready to say any of these undrafted free agents are going to make the 53-man roster. Coward's a practice squad guy, but I really like all of the rest of the depth on the defensive line there. I think there's about six or seven guys that are all very clearly ahead of Rashad Coward. I like him. He's got some nice flashing abilities there as far as short area quickness and being able to make plays in the backfield and having a good understanding of his gap and sort of lane integrity against the run. But I'm not, you know, after that fat ass from one of the East Carolina last year, Terry Williams, I'm not going to get too excited about
Swamp Monster.
Yeah, the Swamp Monster. All that hype for an undrafted rookie free agent nose tackle. I like Rashad Coward. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to not trying to poo-poo on him, but when you sign John Jenkins and Jay Howard, you bring back C.J. Wilson and Jonathan Bullard, and of course the stud of the defensive line, Mitch Unrein. I don't know how Rashad Coward fits in there. But to jump back on Andy Phillips real quick to supplement what Shane was saying, because Phillips had crossed my mind before Shane said him. His field goal numbers in his career at Utah, they're not bad, but it's not like, oh wow, this guy's gonna destroy Connor Barth. I was looking last year, he did not attempt a field goal over 50 yards, and he was 7 for 10 from 40 to 49 yards, 70%, and then he was 14 of 15 on everything under 40 yards last year. The year before that, in his career, he's 3 for 3 from 50 yards out of a good 65 or 77 field goal attempts. Only 3 have been from 50 yards. And in his career, he's less than 70% from 40 to 49 yards. So there's not, you know, he's going to hit your under 40s really consistently, you know, above 95% there. But anything longer than 40 yards is, at least in college, was more of a mixed bag. And if he's not hitting 40 yarders in college, I don't know necessarily how that's going to get much better in the NFL. Not that it's going to get any worse, but if we have a guy hitting 70% from the deep ones, I might take what Connor Barth is offering me.
Lauren didn't hit anything in college, so. Hey, I shortchanged Andy Phillips. He's a 28-year-old rookie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, 28. I was going to correct you, but
did
I didn't
he do
want
the
to.
Mormon thing?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, he must have.
Wait till he get on John Fox's and Nate Bresky's steroid program. He'll be kicking 60-yarders.
Yeah, I suppose. His kickoffs are really bad, too.
Oh, so, really?
The leg strength has always been an issue.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy, Shane.
They took him off of kickoffs his senior year. He did them the first 2 years, and they're like, eh.
Yeah, Lauren, fuck off.
Hey, I was hoping to see better from the kid too. I'm not trying to. This wasn't against you. It's just more like I want to see Andy Phillips beat Connor Barth. But
and where's Pat O'Donnell's competition?
Yeah,
and I'm actually
where's
being
Pat?
Dead serious.
I was just gonna say that.
He's posting
my thunder.
Posting videos of kicking over palm trees, and everybody's supposed to be so impressed by that. But has there ever been competition brought in for the guy?
Nope.
I don't believe so
no.
either.
There's I saw nobody. A thing too that now, according to Mike Prefer, the asshole Vikings special teams coach who said some really horrible things before and still got to keep his job for some reason, he claims that every single team now is using their punter as their holder on the field goal team, and that no one now uses backup quarterbacks. He said the Saints were the last team to use a backup quarterback as the holder on field goals. But now, you know, I'd like to see Pat O'Donnell run some fake punts. Was he like 6'5", 225 at the combine?
Yeah, he's a great
whatever.
Athlete.
He ran
like a 4.6 at the combine, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, give that guy the ball. Let him throw, let him run, let him take it on the field goal. I mean, there's a playmaker right there.
Yeah, what the hell?
I agree. I think there's been an overall lack of creativity, imagination with the present special teams coach. I haven't seen anything. You know, like our buddy Dave Taub. I mean, that guy, yeah. One of the best in the league.
And hey, little breaking Chicago Bears special teams news. Daniel Braverman on Snapchat tonight is asking for anybody around Chicago that can punt the football so he can snag some punts. So
does he not have Pat O'Donnell's phone number?
Nah, who knows? Pat O'Donnell's probably down in Miami kicking over palm trees still. He doesn't have to be in Chicago yet. So,
well, and that gets to that sort of gets to a question I wanted to ask all you guys, because, you know, you guys much more than I, especially Lauren and Draft Dr. Phil, spent hours and hours and hours and hours evaluating tape and like Phil tweeted out the other day that's his life. You know, when he's not caring for his family, he's watching film. He lives and breathes Chicago Bears football, but also looking at what, you know, the next crop of prospects looks like. But the one thing that the film doesn't tell us is that mental makeup that makes a champion. You know, you look at Tom Brady, and Tom Brady had a fairly decent career at Michigan. He wasn't always the starter. He couldn't win the number one job for whatever reason and so forth. But
like
it
Trubisky.
Yeah.
There you go. Confirmed.
But see, that's part. That's
oh
part,
my! We're going to the Super Bowl.
But that's part of that. That's really the question that I was going to is: do you think that Trubisky has that mental makeup? You know, because I really haven't seen it when he sat down with Gruden. And I know this is really superfluous, superficial evaluation. But when he sat down with Gruden, he just didn't seem like the kind of guy that you think has that Michael Jordan, Walter Payton, Tom Brady mental will to win that you are just super excited to root for. I want to go around the table and get your opinions on that. Let me begin with Shane.
Yeah, it is a good point, Aldo, because it was kind of hard to watch the Coach Gruden thing because, I mean, I'm going to hopefully just chalk it up to nervousness because he did seem very much out of his element. And I guess my quarterback of my favorite team, I guess I don't need him to be, you know, in the situation on TV drawing up, you know, plays for John Gruden. I guess I don't need him to star in that role, but it did give me a little bit of pause because, you know, you saw the other guys were, you know, very calm and joking. And Mitchell did seem extremely nervous and out of his element, like I said. But I just think a lot of that's going to come with playing. He's just so limited in that area. You know, you bring up Michael Jordan, you bring up Walter Payton, and these are guys that throughout college, I mean, Michael Jordan was player of the year 2 years in a row and played in every collegiate ball game that he participated in, and the same thing with Walter Payton. And it's just kind of a, you know, this is newfound territory for Mitch Trubisky, you know, being thrown into all of this and coming to a, you know, football rabid city like Chicago that, you know, you heard Phil talk about Adrian Amos back in when we first got him. Well, you know, he played decent for a rookie, but we saw how depleted our defense was. And you see a guy like Adrian Amos that shows some semblance of positive play. So the masses just hitched on to him. It's like, oh, he's, you know, he's going to be, you know, the next Gary Fensick. He's the next guy just because we were so talent deprived. And I think you see a lot of that in Chicago, obviously. I mean, Jay Cutler's the best of what we ever had. And It's gonna be a fun ride to see how Trubisky does adjust to all this, but you know the media scrutiny and the pressure that comes with that's kind of away from the football field is gonna be part of it. And we've all seen, you know, again with Jay, how, you know, a couple of questions taken the wrong way or even a facial expression can you know, get gasoline poured on the fire, and it just gets out of hand. So it does give me pause, but I guess we got to kind of give him enough rope to see, you know, what he can do with it. And really, if he plays well on the football field, everything else is going to take care of itself off the field.
I hear you, you know, and we got to remember he's a kid. So when he steps into that room with Gruden and the lights and the camera and John Gruden, you know, it's yep. Very difficult to make an evaluation on that. But we hope he grows into the role.
He's my age, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what, Lauren, I got to say this. You're much cooler and more collected than Mitch Trubisky. I know you don't get as much pussy as he does.
He likes getting a little bit more than I do, yeah.
Pussy,
what's
Lauren's
that?
Lauren's a hit at the Blue Oyster in Wisconsin.
And Trubisky actually is like a year and a half older than me, technically.
Okay, technically. See, that's Lauren.
He's got a lot more money.
Himself.
Yeah, 30 million more than I do. But,
okay. Yeah.
Does he have a nice car?
And he
car?
Doesn't have to put Nutella on his beef, you sick bastard.
Can I say this?
Please say
Mitch?
It.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
Can we, like, kick Phil off the call for a Packers reference there, Rodgers reference there?
Oh, this is
this
Olivia
Munn
the new wave
there?
Of quarterbacks.
Mute him.
Did Aaron Rodgers look stoic and Herculean when he was sweating Herculean. Bullets when he was getting drafted. Now, so I think this young man's time is going to come on the football field. I think people are going to get a surprise here. I really do.
Hope you're right, brother. I really, really do. And you know, and it's early for us to make those opinions without seeing him in camp and seeing him interact with his teammates and seeing him making those throws when that right tackle misses a block and the left tackle misses another block. But, you know, just based on what we have heard him, you know, it just makes you wonder, does he have that will to win? Lauren, what are your thoughts? Oh. Lauren,
check all the boxes, Lauren.
Because, like, I mean, I'm not a fan of the personality and facial expression analysis that
I agree with.
And I think Shane put this very. And I'm not accusing us of necessarily doing that because it's a valid point. But we're all sort of prefacing this in the idea that like we're not basing our evaluation of Mitch Trubisky based on his personality and his smile and the way he carries himself. But it is something to keep an eye on. But at the same time, I feel like in the grand scheme of the Chicago Bears 53-man roster and the future success of this team, I mean, even if Mitch Trubisky had the personality of Jay Cutler, you can still win Super Bowls with that. I mean, if you put a 22-year-old Jay Cutler on this team, with, you know, or you put a personality of Jay Cutler into Mitch Trubisky's 22-year-old body, I mean, you can work with that. You put a defense behind that, and you have Jordan Howard and a running game, and give him a couple wide receivers to throw to. I mean, there's a contender right there. I mean, I think it's not this make or break trait, and I'm not trying to say that you guys were saying that, but I think it's just good to remember that, like, as much as you want to see that heart of a champion, that true, you know, leader, this cerebral, you know, personality that just dominates the football team and everyone just, you know, attracts to him. That's very nice to have, and it's a great thing for a quarterback to be. But his performance on the field, like Shane said, is going to be what ultimately defines him and his playing career. And I think you can win Super Bowls regardless of whether your quarterback quite has the Tom Brady. Maybe it's easier when you have the Peyton Manning, the Tom Brady, the guy that everyone can be around, but we've seen much lesser quarterbacks have much more success without that sort of personality trait.
I think you make great points there, Lauren, and when you look at what he has done on the football field and how he has performed under adversity in his his first season playing football at North Carolina State, he comes in off the bench and throws a game-winning touchdown. He has that tremendous come-from-behind victory over, what was it, Shane, that you tweeted out that game was going to be replayed on ESPNU. Against Stanford in the bowl game. You know, he fought back. He didn't play great, but you could tell that he wanted desperately to win that game. So, you know, that goes much further than what we are seeing in terms of how a guy behaves on camera or how a guy behaves on a sideline and so forth, because that doesn't really mean shit in the long run.
And you string together a win or two in Chicago – and you get that ball rolling, things are going to, you know, we know how confidence spreads like wildfire, especially on the football field or really in any sport in general. And I said that's the best thing that could happen for the kid, for him to go out there. And like Lauren said, it's a great point. He doesn't have to go out there and be the franchise guy immediately. I mean, if Loggins has any semblance of a brain – you know, it's going to be it's going to be the Jordan Howard show to take some pressure off of him. And then, you know, off of that, Trubisky can play complimentary football while he's still gaining experience. But confidence is going to go a long way with this kid. I think he's a country boy from Mentor, Ohio. That, what did they say? There's like, I don't know, 900 people in his hometown or something like that. It was very, very small. And, you know, bright lights, big city, and he goes out and strings together a couple of good games, it's going to be the kid's going to own this town. We'll just put it that way. Yep. You know, no matter how bad the Chicago Bears are, this is always going to be a Chicago Bears town, no matter what. I mean, Aldo, you live there, you know it. Yep. The Blackhawks can win a Stanley Cup. The Bulls can win 6 titles in 8 years. The Cubs can get lucky and knock my Dodgers out of the NLCS, fuckers. But Mitch Trubisky shows shows that he can play NFL football. The kid's going to be a rock star. And fuck John Gruden and his show. None of that's going to matter.
And one thing I want to add about Mitch Trubisky, I was going through some of the data I pulled before the draft last year, and I wanted to see if I had done anything about fourth quarter stats with these quarterbacks, and I didn't. But I did do red zone numbers, and Aldo talked earlier about how, like, you know, about him being confident in Mike Glennon, at least producing statistically, even if that doesn't result in wins quite as much as maybe you'd like to see. But I was wondering how, you know, Trubisky would fare, because we talked about how Brian Hoyer could move the ball between the 20s just fine, put up 300 yards a game, but it was in the red zone that's where he struggled. And I was checking Trubisky's red zone numbers compared to Watson, Kaiser, and Mahomes. He did have one of the lower completion percentages of the four. He completed 46.4% of his passes in the red zone, which included 4 drops, 1 batted pass, and 2 throwaways. So that if you include those as not incompletions, it goes back up to 59.2% of what PFF calls their adjusted completion percentage, which was still third among those quarterbacks. But 17 touchdowns, 0 interceptions in the red zone. So like Marcus Mariota, Mitch Trubisky has never thrown a red zone interception. So at the very least, if he's inaccurate in the red zone, I think sometimes he's trying to force throws and trying to make touchdowns, but they're safe throw. So he has the potential there to be successful in the area that the Bears struggled last year, and hopefully Dowalog is at least able to get him opportunities in the red zone, and then he's going to take care of the ball there.
Now that we're on the eve of training camp, the rookies have reported today, the day that we're taping, and I want to get kind of a sense as to where your confidence level is for the 2017 season. Clearly, as we spoke about earlier, we're talking about a Chicago Bears team that is building towards something really special. That's the plan. The team has elected to go that way. So I'd be surprised, frankly, if anyone of you told me that they're going to be playing in the Super Bowl. But let's talk about our expectations for 2017 this season, and then I want to talk about that again at the end of training camp on the eve of week one and kind of gauge, you know, whether our confidence level increased or shrunk. So let me begin with Shane and get your thoughts on what are your expectations?
Is that Shane or Lester on the line? I was trying to gauge with a mouth breathing.
I'm mouth breathing.
All I hear
is, could have been me. I've got like 3 beers.
Not Lord.
I mute like a respectable podcast guest.
Ah, look at you.
I thought I was on. I don't know.
I've been on mute a couple of times. I heard a couple noises here and there.
All right, Lester. I mean Shane. What are your expectations? What are your expectations for 2017 right now at this point of the year?
Well, I'm going to unfollow Phil on Twitter. No? Guess I'm a mouth breather. No, my expectations right now are a lot like they were last year. I heard Lauren, you know, point out that the early season schedule is not going to help. And
it's tough, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the Bears are going to take their lumps early on, but my expectation is for them to get better every week. And I just, unfortunately, it does factor into it that they, you know, the injuries are always a part of the game, but they just depleted the team so much last year. Hopefully it's not a huge topic with this young team moving forward. And we can see these guys, you know, get some cohesion and actually string together some consistent games, yeah. And then in the second half of the season, we can see these guys, you know, maybe pop up and sneak out a couple of games. And I'm not talking about sneaking up and beating the Vikings. We do that. who gives a shit about the Vikings or the Lions? Or we beat all these guys, so fuck everybody else in the NFC North. That's no surprise. But I just want to see these young guys, and I do. I want to see Mitch Trubisky play if Glennon fails, and I want to see him show the semblance and of being a actual NFL quarterback that's gonna, you know, give this entire fan base hope moving forward, you know, into the 2018 offseason, because you get a young team with talent and a young signal caller that is, you know, inspiring to other players with as much cap space as this team has, and you know, draft picks coming in, and you know, it can really help you moving forward, and maybe, you know, the Bears can make some hay a little bit earlier than everybody else expects. But I'm not going to sit here and say playoffs or Super Bowl or anything like that. I just want to see some consistency, and that includes the coaches, you know, with Loggins, you know, especially, you know, that Colin, you know, the running game, and hopefully him realizing that Jordan Howard is the bell cow, and he needs to be, you know, a part of the game plan each and every week. But no, I just want to see consistency from these guys, you know, getting better every week. And I, you know, the second half of the season, I want to be that team that the, you know, national media and especially the other teams in the NFL are like, wow, you know, they're really building something. We don't want to, these, you know, these young Chicago Bears are coming to town, and we don't want to face them, because they're gonna, you know, they're gonna punch us in the mouth, and we don't want to deal with that.
Yep. All right, Phil. I typically go to you last, you know, because you're kind of the guru at the top of the mountain, you know, and we want your word last and so forth. But then you always complain. Well, these guys have already said everything I was gonna say, so I'm gonna go to you next. And share with us your thoughts about what your expectations at this point of the season, at this point on the eve of training camp, what are your expectations for 2017?
I'm Casey Kasem.
This is last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is that's up tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.
I'm looking at a Chicago Bears front seven on defense, obviously, that has an opportunity. You know, Kwiatkowski is a question mark. I think Chris Armstrong asking a question, there's some validity to it, because I was asking the question. They didn't really answer, because Danny Trevathan is a huge risk, one with which Lauren Cox went out on a limb and said he might not be on this roster come 2018, which really he could be 100% right in Trevathan. So that position, Kwiatkowski really will have to take a next step, because he's had some very terrible plays surrounded by some very good plays. So the depth there, and I agree with Aldo, I could see a veteran being brought in at that mark where they could just jump into a defense at the 90 cutoff to 53 and get somebody in there if, you know, Kwiatkowski's not showcasing what you want to see. Because other than that, I think you see a very big improvement. I've said Jay Howard is going to be the steal of free agency. I think that him playing that five technique put Bullard onto notice. So if Bullard is who Jose Cotto thinks he is, then he better come to camp prepared and ready to rock and roll. Because I think this defense, with the talent they have up front, is going to be a much improved defense of what you saw last year. Cravon LeBlanc, as you guys joke, I think this football player is going to be special at the nickel. And Callahan is a very talented, but much like Miller, a health risk. So you're going to have talent there interior, and you improved at the cornerback and the safety position. So this defense could epically turn the tides of what, you know, as Aldo again
expertly said and depicted about the national narrative. They know absolutely crap bullshit about the Bears, and they never do unless it's the 85 team and they're doing a documentary 37 years later.
Yeah, you're right.
So, it's like that this defense could surprise, and if that interior offensive line and maybe the best running back in the NFL in Jordan Howard, it's arguable. I say he is a better back than Zeke based on what I value, and that's character. So if you look at the talent, I think you can make a case for either one of them. You add that interior offensive line with maybe the best running back in the NFL, and who's Mike Glennon? You know, if Mike Glennon comes here and does what Aldo thinks and plays some good football, then this football team can be a 9-7 football team. You know, that's if everything healthy going forward. I think the wide receiver position is a shepherd's pie of the NFL. It's just a conglomeration of a bunch of guys that, you know, talent could reign from there. So right now, today, my expectation is 8-8, you know, and that's obviously an improvement from 3-10.
Huge.
So I think that is where I am. But, you know, if all things go, you know, you're talking about a Tarik Cohen coming in here and surprising the league and a Shaheen, and your offensive line stays healthy with continuity and you have that running back, then you could see a 9 or 10 win talent in this thing. I know that's crazy talk, but I'm just looking at the talent. I'm totally throwing out the coaching because I don't know that until we see it. But based on what I see, Aldo, talent-wise, we talked about this team had enough talent to win last year. I think they've gotten better. I think Ryan Pace did a great job of recognizing the year of the quarterback. You heard it here first out of the guys. You know, I normally don't give this guy credit, but Shane, the mailman Marsaw, you know, made that commentary way back in December.
And I think it was this time of year last year. Like, next year's going to be the year of the quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. So Shane deserves a lot of credit. Bears barroom.
Shower the mouth breather with praise. Let's go.
And one thing, I really like Lester. So it was just a joke based on him being on the podcast. And you could hear Lester breathing like Darth Vader throughout it. But
Lester's great, no doubt about
so,
it.
So, you know, I just think that this team, Pace, has done a great job moving forward. So let's see what they do. If all things go according to the Pace plan, then I think the future looks bright in Chicago, and I think you could see a 9 wins. I know that's crazy talk, but talent-wise and where it's important, it all starts up front. If Charles Leno in a contract year comes in here and balls out, and you get a competition at right tackle, and Bobby Massey feels the heat, a fire set under his ass from Compton, then you really have continuity there with a quarterback that's coming here and says, you know what, I'm not letting this fucking rookie beat me. I'm going to go out there and ball out, and they could sneak up and surprise some people. It's not like they weren't in games, folks. They were in games. They had some shitty play at corner from Tracy Porter and company. I think they improved that position. That was a big weakness, and they got better on the offensive line. They got a talented running back in here and Cohen, who's going to surprise people. And Shaheen also is going to be a mismatch all over the field, not just in the red zone. I think people always tend to, you know, be biased with the tight end in the red zone. But a tight end on third down and three, and you run that zone fake, and he's just running a little drag round. He's 6'7", 280 pounds, beating anybody. Now all of a sudden you just dump it to him. He's taking off for 25 yards, and you move into field. That stuff happens all the time. So,
Did you hear Adam Hoge talk about Shaheen? It was either yesterday or today.
No, I don't
talk to some. He talked to some inside people specifically about Shaheen, and they said they're really blown away with his hands. If they had to point out one thing that he needs to work on, it's kind of his coordination. But they said if he can, the coordination, they said, is gonna come. You know, that's part of the Division II to the NFL jump. That's totally expected by them. But they said once he gets that, the guy that he talked to, his exact words were, look out.
So. Yeah, I think Shaheen's going to be a stud. You know, I had my eye on him through this whole training or pre-draft process. And, you know, I was critical of the Bears drafting him so high. But clearly they knew they had their ear on the pipeline. They knew that other teams were looking at him as a second-round draft pick. So they jumped on the kid. And I think it's going to pay off. Phil, you want to wrap up your thoughts before I turn it over to Lauren?
No, I think I kind of said I'm looking at a 9, possibly 10.
Ooh, now playoff, it's 10.
If they're healthy.
You just went from 8 wins 5 minutes later to 9 wins. Now you're up at 10.
No, Super Bowl. Listen,
I love your passion. I love it.
My expectation is 8-8. I'm saying clearly.
Eight, if eight, they but, stay know, healthy. 10.
My heart says 11.
Maybe a Super Bowl.
Where is the Modelo? Where is the Modelo?
Leave the Modelo for the Bears.
Lauren Cox.
8-8 is my prediction.
It's on the record, 8-8 with as a minimum with 10-6 as a top line. Okay.
There you go.
Lauren, tell us your thoughts about how you feel about the Chicago Bears, your expectations for them for the 2017 right now, pre-training camp.
I'm feeling like 2017 is going to feel like 2015 again for me and the Bears. Hmm. I was looking over their schedules from the last couple of years, and the overwhelming theme throughout John Fox's tenure here has been at the very least, the Bears are in close games down to the end. Last year, you know, there were a lot of those fourth quarter blown leads, opportunities at the end of the game for, you know, Deontay Thompson to hold on to a touchdown pass, for Josh Bellamy to hold on to a touchdown pass, or for the defense to get one last stop. And you know, one way or another, the Bears were 1-6 in games that were decided by 7 or fewer points last year. The only one, I think, was the Lions game, off the top of my head. The first Lions game that they won was a 3-point victory. But you look back at that 2015 season, and I had forgotten how many of those same situations they were in. There were actually 11 games that year decided by 3 or fewer points, especially after they started the season 0-3 from there. The majority of the remainder of their games were all those close decisions. They didn't get really blown out by any team, and except for Minnesota at the end of the year, the rest of the games were all pretty close, or the blowout win against the St. Louis Rams when Zach Miller went off for a big game. But in that season, they were 5-6 in those close games, but decided by 7 or fewer points. And a big reason for that was because of the man under center. Jay Cutler had 4 fourth quarter comebacks and 4 game-winning touchdown drives within, what is Pro Football Reference's, an offensive scoring drive in the fourth quarter or overtime that puts the winning team ahead for the last time. So 4 of those 5, actually, I guess I would assume 4 of those 5 games decided by 7 or fewer points were those fourth quarter game-winning drives by Jay Cutler. I know there was one against Kansas City that I got to witness in person that was just a beautiful, beautiful comeback attempt by Jay Cutler. And yep. So I feel like the 2017 Chicago Bears, I mean, they're just almost guaranteed to not be as bad as they were last year. I mean, you have a better roster, and in theory, you're not going to have 19 players on injured reserve, although obviously anything can happen in that department. But to me, it took Herculean play from Jay Cutler on some of those 4 fourth quarter game-winning comeback drives to get that team to be 5-6 in those close games. And so I think a lot of it's going to depend on what Mike Glennon does. I think
who is offense, Mike Glennon?
Yeah, who is Mike Glennon? Yep. You know, the Bears offense and defense are both good enough to be in close games against mediocre to below average opponents. I mean, I think they're going to get, you know, like potentially the Pittsburghs of the world, the Atlantas of the world can, you know, pop them up pretty good and win by double digits. But when they get in those games with teams like the Lions and the Vikings and even like the Cincinnati Bengals, where there's not this necessarily clear talent differential between the two teams, at least on paper. I think you're going to see the Bears be in a lot of these close, exciting games. And I'm just not sure if Mike Glennon can be the guy that puts them over the top in the majority of those games. I think we're going to see another, like, 9 or 10 games decided by 7 or fewer points. And I think the Bears are going to win maybe 4 of them. And you'd ultimately finish with about 6 wins. You know, they may blow out the San Francisco 49ers, and maybe they blow out the Cleveland Browns, and then they get another 4 close wins. But I think we're going to see a fair number more of disappointments in close games. But at least they're in it. You know, it's not like the last Trestman year where it's like, God, there, you know, there's just nothing. We're getting blanked by 40 points by the Patriots and the Packers. I think we're going to see close games. You're going to see a lot of those. It's almost more frustrating, but at least it's a different feeling than just being completely blown out. It's the feeling of having hope and then having that hope dashed at the last minute, as compared to never having hope in the beginning. And I think we're going to see some variation of hope from week to week, especially in the second half of the season and after that first 4-game stretch, because you never know when that schedule looks tough on paper in July. I mean, the Carolina Panthers have a very high chance of being a bad team this year, and they're in that first 8-week schedule. They play the Saints too. I mean, Drew Brees could get hurt, and then that's a much easier game. So it's not as though I'm sitting here thinking they're going to go 0-8 to start the year, but you never know after those first 3 weeks. I think it's going to be tough to start, and then like that 2015 season, you're going to see things pick back up, and maybe a few weeks after the bye week, you're getting close to 500 again, and then the losses start to pile up a little bit later, and you ultimately finish in that 6-7 win range.
You know, I'm going to just offer this, because I think all three of you guys just did an excellent job of talking about your expectations. Right now, it's really hard to put into words what my expectations are, but my hope is that we see improvement in this coaching staff, that we can go beyond the stage that we're at now, where we're constantly, after every fucking game, questioning this coaching staff, their in-game decisions, their pre-game decisions as to who they suited up, and their post-game comments, you know, that just fucking drive me nuts. I'm in the communications business, so listening to John Fox talk.
Typically, that's how you get leads in game and scoring points.
Just fucking drives me wild. Yeah, I mean, Jesus. I'd love to see this coaching staff make a quantum leap forward so that for 2018, maybe we're not talking about revamping this coaching staff. Maybe we are talking about, hey, John Fox, you know, and Ryan Pace are in coordination here. You know, Ryan wants to build this team for the future, and Fox is coaching this team, and we saw it by them getting 8, 9, even 10 wins, whatever the fuck it is. I just hope that this coaching staff can finally, you know, transfer themselves from being one of the problems on the team to one of the positives on the team, you know? And if that doesn't happen, I'm just going to go through another fucking heart attack season. And my doctor has told me, you can't afford that many more heart attack seasons with the way you drink, brother.
to build on that real quick, a question for the rest of the group. Is there any chance that Vic Fangio is your defensive coordinator in 2018? Mm. I mean, to me, it's a guarantee that he is going for this. Yeah.
So, I agree. I think,
you know, is he going to be mailing it in from week one a little bit? You know what I mean?
He
doesn't want to be here in theory.
He won't mail it in, though. I mean, his contract is up after the season, so he's got the option of going wherever he wants. My hope would be is that he becomes the head coach, because I'd like to see that continuity, and I think he's – I don't even know if he was on that ESPN list of head coaching candidates.
He wasn't.
But in my mind, he should be, because, you know, his defense, despite the personnel problems that they've had, have performed well year after year. What do you guys think?
It seems to be trending towards the younger guys. I think that's probably the one thing that's going to be against him.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You know, being a first-time head coach, and he's not a young man, for sure.
He's about to turn 59 in August.
Yeah. So you're talking, you know, being 60 years old and becoming a first time head coach. I'm not sure if that happens too often, but
He is going on close to 40 years of NFL coaching experience. He started at age 28, and now he's age 50. Or, so that's 30. What am I doing? Math. This football is not math. But 30 years of NFL coaching experience is not something to balk at.
No. I really do believe he's head coaching material. I really do believe it. Yeah. And I would love to see him as the next head coach of the Bears. But I don't know. You know, what Lauren just told me has fucking depressed me. We're going to end this show with a big, big downer note.
I don't think he mails it in. If they're 2-8, Phil, after 10 weeks, you think Vic Fangio is going to be coaching real hard against the San Francisco 49ers in week 13? No. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, like he'll want to build his own resume enough that he's not going to completely mail it in. But if this season starts to go in the toilet,
he'll be looking for the first door, the exit.
Yeah.
They're 2-8. He might not be here.
Oh my God.
I think Josh Fox might not be here. He might be interim head coach if they're 2-8. Then he's going to change his motivation.
Then he might be trying to get Aldo happy again.
Yeah, what the fuck, guys?
Without a blue pill.
If they fire John Fox, is Loggins interim or is Vic Fangio? I mean, I think we would all.
It's got to be Fangio.
It should be Fangio, but if. Is Ryan would Ryan Pace do Fangio or would he do Dowell Loggins? I mean, especially with the way Fangio's been acting about as far as wanting out of here, is Ryan Pace going to reward that with an interim head coach spot, or is he just going to get?
You know, you could be right, Lauren. Too. I mean, our young quarterback might play into that too. You know, you're 2-8, and is Fangio going to want to come in here and you know really focus everything around Trubisky for the final six games of the season? You know, it could be Ryan Pace stepping in and saying, Dowell, you know, you got your quarterback, you're a young guy. Here's your shot. You know, they could be very aware of Fangio's intentions right now. You know,
They are. You have to be stupid.
He's a pretty straight shooter. Yeah. You know, I'm sure
he's Italian. There's no other way.
I'm sure he's made his thoughts very evident to everybody, but I mean, I think whoever the next coach, the head coach, will be, I think it's got to, boy, I think you got to base a lot of it on number 10 moving forward. What's best for him, myself, and is that
you're right?
Is that
that's firing Dowell Loggins?
yeah. No, exactly. But I mean, are you trusting, just say if Vic Fangio is the next head coach of the Chicago Bears, does that take your momentum wave for Mitch Trubisky down a little bit with having a first time head coach at 60 years old that's a defensive guy? I don't know. Something to think about for sure, but let's not ruin the season yet.
Yeah, I'm fucking having a panic attack right now.
Leave that to the Bear Report. Let those guys talk about that shit.
Episode 3.
We've eclipsed the 2-hour mark, so obviously this is going to be a two-parter. And this is what happens when guys that respect each other's opinion and want to hear each other's opinion start talking Chicago Bears football. We're gonna talk, and all of a sudden, the bartender is gonna say last call, and he said it a long time ago. Guys, I really appreciate your time. Does anybody want to conclude with any last thought before we call it off?
Yeah, at least we're not Chargers fans. Mike Williams.
What happened there?
What happened Mike, there? Catch us up.
Herniated disc, may need back surgery, out for season.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That's why you don't draft a wide receiver number 7 overall, Ryan Pace. Oops.
Oh, snap.
Oh, and I got a message from Jose. He apologizes for not being here tonight. I asked him because he got home about a half hour ago, so I tweeted him and I asked him, you want to come on real quick? And he said, I'm sweaty and I'm starving. I appreciate the invite.
Me too.
He said, tell Shane, Phil, and Lauren that I said a white man can hump. That's why I'm so busy picking up their slack. Spoken like a true Rican.
One thing I wanted to say too was that I missed I missed the soundbite of the guy going, last call for alcohol, ding, 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 ding. Yo, you can say last call at the bar.
That's a post-production inclusion in the show.
We need to bring that back.
We will. We definitely will. I was like, and I got to admit that I walked into this podcast totally unprepared. The last 2 months, I just kind of took them off and spent time with the family and dealing with some issues and stuff. And now it's time for football, you know, and I am so glad that I am getting prepped up by listening to your guys' expert opinion on things. Very knowledgeable, well opinionated from good sources, your own eyes, your own ears. You're not listening to the national media. You're evaluating tape. You're reading from different sources. You're making your own opinion. And that's what makes this show special and what makes Bears Hour Live special. Lauren, tell us what's coming up with Bears Hour Live.
Yeah, we're looking at this weekend doing a little bit of BHL After Dark, going with a little bit of a later show on Sunday.
Ooh. Late night schmooze under the covers.
Late night Chicago Bears talk for you on a Sunday evening. We're going to be looking ahead to Chicago Bears training camp, maybe starting with the offensive side of the ball, talking about what to look for, different position battles, and some of the more interesting competitions, maybe a few names that aren't really being discussed as much out there. I know Phil's already hinted at a few of them, but we're going to go a nice little in-depth dive live on the radio with Bears Hour Live.
And roll out with Carole King's...
What?
Phil.
I was trying to talk up to the top.
All right, Phil, can you give me a little bit more of that sexy talk? Because I want Shane and myself to evaluate who has the sexier voice, you or Lauren.
You know, you're looking at a crazy world, and in a crazy world, you gotta play some crazy songs. Under the late night stars, this one goes out to Shane and Ela, who's currently on a flight away from the U.S. back to Europe. This is called Journey. Don't stop believing, Shane. I know things are hard at the house.
Trying to get me killed.
Tonight we're going with Eddie Money in honor of the new
my countertops, yeah. I'll be watching an AIDS monkey fucking an ostrich on YouPorn tonight all by myself. You boys keep it up.
Shane loves countertops. Expensive countertops. The more expensive.
Don't remind me. Yeah.
Let me say officially, if you drink, please don't drive, and always bear down. We'll be back next week, fellas.
Bear down.
Free OJ.
That motherfucker is going free, right? Trouble?
Hey, he was jerking off in his cell or something, somebody said, right?
Yeah, someone said the juice is loose again.
The juice is loose. That was a great quote. That was a great tweet about Jose.
Oh, yeah. Put that on your hamburger, Lauren.
You know, I realized, too, that it's not the same if you just put Nutella on top of it. Like, if you spoon out some Nutella and set it on a hamburger, what you have to do is buy, you know like the Uncrustable sandwiches that you buy for little kids? They make a version of that with Nutella in the middle, and you have to use one of those as each the top and the bottom bun, so that as you bite into it, the Nutella oozes out of the bun onto the burger. That's really the spirit of the recipe.
If you're going to go that
far,
you might as well totally fucking disgusting. So, yeah, you're there.
I got to tell you, Lauren.
Are Nutella burgers just too healthy for you?
When you eat that, are you wearing a Lamar Houston jersey?
I get just as much brown on my face as I was when I had the Lamar Houston jersey on. How about that?